So yeah, I always like to start everything I do with a bit of time just to arrive in ourselves. So kind of leading us into a kind of moment of arriving. And so my invitation to you is just to, take some time with me in that, just a couple of minutes. You can close your eyes or just look around or just, but it's a way, just a way of beginning and arriving. Okay. So getting yourself comfortable. And maybe just beginning to notice your environment, or even if you're like we're so familiar, aren't you, with our experience, but just looking around you, checking out the room you're in, noticing it freshly. And also noticing what you're sitting on, how it's supporting you. Just simple. Noticing. You might notice your skin and your clothes, like the edges of your body. You might notice perhaps inside your body, perhaps just with the breath, or just noticing a bit more like the throat and your belly, chest. Just in a kind of light way. How is it in there right now? It's almost like saying hello to yourself, you could say, just this moment. And you don't have to be different. You don't have to feel good. You could be all over the place if you like. Everything's welcome. So you come as you are. So maybe just noticing, a couple more breaths and then sort of broadening out your awareness a bit, taking in call and being here together. Okay. So I just want to start by saying a little bit about myself, just very briefly. My name is Peter Gill. I teach a life skill known as focusing. The word doesn't describe really what it's about very well, but I've been practicing it for around 15 years, teaching it for about 13 years, and this is the first of three seminars where I'm just sharing some themes or applications of this practice, or some insights from this approach that I've sort of gleaned over the past 15 years. So this first one I've sort of perhaps provocatively entitled Freedom from Ego. So we'll be exploring both kind of in theory and a little bit of experientially around this topic. If at any point you have a question, I mean, I'll answer it right there and then, but you can put it in a chat box or flag it up or wave. So please let it be interactive. Make it work for you, this call. It's not like I've got some expert sort of opinion I'm kind of giving you, and you've got to accept, allow it to be a kind of interaction, something that's that will be helpful for you. Yeah? So I've got a question to start with, which I'm going to put out there, and you can reply by chat or just speaking. Which is just like, what do you associate with the word ego when you hear it, or like just a few flash kind of what is it, like, what is it you immediately think of ego, like what comes there, words, associations? Feel free to chat, feel free to say it. Just get an everyday sort of response to it. What does that word bring for you? You would want to, and feel free just to, you have to, if you can't unmute yourself, let me know and I'll unmute you. There we go, Mari.
Selfish and bad.
Okay, great. Thank you. Let's get it rolling. Selfish and bad. Brilliant. Thank you.
I think of having a, it's a, you've got a big ego.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not, it's never, a never a small ego, is it? Do you know what I mean? I don't think so. I've never heard that term, but yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, yeah.
It's also kind of hard, that it's a hard thing. It's not a soft thing, ego.
Yeah.
It's got an edge and it's hard. No, it's not an edge, it's just hard.
It's hard, yeah, that's right. Thank you. And then, and there's something coming up in the chat box, which is to everyone. Is that all right, Max? Yeah, it's like, yeah, I think, just in case you haven't seen it, so I think I can, I think I can feel negative as it's about being selfish. Exactly, yeah. There's people treat it as like it's around that, exactly, being selfish. Thank you. So I've got a little experiment for you to do right now. Not an experiment, it's actually just a thing. If you, this is only if you've got access to some other kind of screen, or if you're not on full screen. If you do an image search for ego on Google, I'm going to exit full screen and do this myself on Safari or you know, one of your browser. Just tap in ego into Google, and then you flick that to image search. Just for those who want to do this, I'll also be share. I might even try and share this screen with you. There we go. That's perfect. Can I do the share this screen? Let's just give it a share screen. There we go. Great. Share screen. Hopefully that'll pop up in your... Can you see that screen? Is it shared to you? Great. So you see the things there? Yeah. Look. Kill your ego. Yeah, that's one of the first one that pops up. Yeah. Leave the ego, otherwise everyone would leave you. Actually, it's not as bad as when I first ego kill it. There we go. There's some nice messages out there about it. Yeah. So the general impression you get when you do this, or like your ego will destroy you. Love it. It's a kind of battlefield, really, and not everywhere, but a kind of general sense of it is something that we don't want. I'm going to stop showing that. Something that's not okay, something that we should try and get rid of, something we should be battling with. Yeah. Mm. Oh, Lucian shares, yeah, an internal mechanism for own survival. Great, that's something a little bit more empathic. Or at least a bit more understanding about what might be happening, yeah? Art says here, aggrandizement. Self-story. So yeah, that's right. So there's something a little bit more, opening up a little bit more here about what it could be. So I want to explore two broad themes today around this topic. So how can we relate to it in a more helpful way? If there is, and what is actually happening? What is it that we're talking about here? Because that's kind of, I think, even more fundamental. But before I start talking about that, I actually want to have a little play and do something experiential, if that's all right. Just do two little exercises. I think we've got time. Two kind of approaches from focusing from this method I've been practicing. Touch the whole topic a little bit more experientially, that I think will help us when we talk about it more theoretically, help us feel into it a bit differently. So there's two led experiential explorations. Yeah. So the first one I'm calling Going Beyond Labels. So it's just a 5-minute led exploration. So I'm going to guide you. You could call it meditation. That might not be a helpful word, but a guided experience of just inviting you to explore your experience in a certain way. And follow it as best as you can. If it doesn't work for you, obviously ignore it. I always say this to everything I do. It's impossible to do a group thing and it work for everyone at the same time. You know, but hopefully it will touch something of what's happening. So yeah, the first one is called Going Beyond Labels. You know, so often we think we know what's going on, don't we? Because we have a label for it. Oh, I know what I'm feeling because I've called this anxious, or I know this is the kind of experience because I've got a, well, yeah, this is my, I'm just being egotistical. That's another label we're working with. But the invitation is just we're going to spend a few minutes just trying to sort of sensing or noticing, we're taking our awareness to our direct experience. If you like, a little bit beyond or without labels as much as we can. So it's a sort of kind of just touching it in a different way. Yeah? So it takes about 5 minutes, maybe a bit slightly less. So I'll just lead us in and I'm going to invite questions after that. Just how was it? So I'm just checking. I think we're all okay. Yeah, so the idea, just getting comfortable like we did in the first moment. It's important just to be physically comfortable. So this really goes back to the origins of this practice, focusing. When it was first researched, Eugene Gendlin and Carl Rogers noticed that therapy worked when people took their awareness to their direct experience. So rather than talking about their experience, they were actually touching in on it at the same time, let's say. They were actually tuning into their direct experience. So that's what we're going to do. Or at least I'm offering a chance to play with that a little. So the first thing, inviting you to notice just your edges of your body, just that sense of being in a body. And often we can sense something of the shape of it, our posture. The space we take up. So just noticing that in a simple way. And then taking awareness, noticing the middle of your body. So this is your throat and your chest, your belly. And begin to sort of tune into like any sensations that might be there. And see if you can, or inviting you to just notice it without giving it a name for now. Maybe you've already called it something, or it's tight, or it's anxious, or it's, but noticing that process of labeling, if that's happening, that's fine, you know, that's okay. In a way, just having that there, but inviting you to sense it a bit more without labels, just as it is, like. Or imagine you've never ever sensed it before. Or maybe you haven't. It's also possible. Imagine you've never noticed what it's like inside that middle part of your body ever before. And maybe there's sensation or energy or movement. Warmth or coolness. So these are kind of, or even these are labels, but perhaps kind of hold them lightly. So noticing just how it is for you. Maybe you don't feel anything, and that's also fine. You don't notice anything. See if you can sense yourself just for a moment without any words for it. And gradually bringing that just to a close, just a small exploration. as you bring that to a close, just inviting you to maybe open your eyes if they've been closed, or broaden your awareness out a bit, feel your whole body. Now, somewhat contradictory, I'm going to ask you to try and describe or something, put into words, put into some kind of labels. What did you notice even about that attempt, or how was it? Could you stay there without words or commentary or labels? And it doesn't matter if you couldn't, but just how was that experience? Maybe invite a couple, two or three people to share if they want. And again, if you didn't notice if it was all a bit difficult, that's fine. Just an experiment. And you can share by chat or just talking. Josie. Yes. Oh. Oh, there we go.
Hello?
I can hear you now. Sorry, yeah. Carry on.
Okay. I was really quite astonished by the space when I left the words to the side, just how spacious, like open country.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Space and open country. Yeah. Lovely. Thanks. And Mari, did you make a...
I found that different parts of my body felt differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it very difficult not to put any words to the feelings.
Yeah, sure.
Even though the feelings were a bit strange and hard to describe, even so, it was hard not to try.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. Thank you. And just maybe to add here, what we did wasn't at all a complete focusing thing. In fact, in a way, you are trying to find words for things. But I just thought I'd just try something a bit different here, like a more of a direct sensing. Just playing a little bit. But anything else anyone wants to add or share? Great, Ian.
So I felt constantly that I'm trying to explain in a way what I'm feeling in a way that corresponds to my model of things.
Yeah, so sure.
I felt this need of maintaining an integrity of my explanation mechanism. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's right. Like your mind inside your mind's kind of explaining things to yourself, even perhaps.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, we could call that our commentary, or yeah. I mean, it's so much part of our experience. That's right. Great, thank you. I mean, well, this touches many themes. This what people are talking about, and how it's hard for us, isn't it? It's hard for us to sit in a space that isn't about explanations or kind of labeling or commenting or kind of having an opinion or knowing or anything that's not like that is hard for us. So that's just something to start with, really. Yeah. Okay, well, let's hold that exercise, and we're going to do another one now, something a bit different. So that's sort of, you could call that direct sensing or going beyond labels, and I'll kind of tie it into the theme later. So this is a second exercise, and this is what I'm calling getting bigger than your feelings. So for those people who know focusing already will know probably where we're heading with this. If you don't, then it's perhaps something new, but lead us in again a short experiential exploration of something that's been profoundly valuable to me in this approach, which is, you could say, this capacity or developing the capacity to be with my feelings or with myself without feeling like it's all of me. Maybe one of the troubles we get into many troubles, but one of the troubles we get into is getting overwhelmed by experience or feeling like it's all of us. So I'm going to lead us in a little exploration now. Just to play with some words and how, rather miraculously, if we change how we say something, it can actually change how we experience it. Or it might do, it doesn't always do. But this is a kind of an approach that comes from one of my focusing teachers, Anweser Cornell. And it's a way of helping us to develop a relationship to our experience where we're not, where it's not all of us, which you could call getting bigger than your feelings, like developing a bigger you, you could say. Again, it's a very big topic, but we'll just touch in on it now. So I like to also call this a spot the difference exercise. So I'm going to make an invitation to you to notice, to say something in two different ways, and then to notice if there's any difference experientially. How is it for you? And sort of for the purposes of this little exploration, inviting you to think of maybe a difficult sensation or a difficult feeling that you're having right now or you have in your life. It could also be something simple, tension, anxiety, impatience, something that's maybe not the worst, horriblest thing, you know, but just something that's a bit difficult. And you're not going to tell anyone about it or anything like that. I'm just going to invite you to sort of explore it in two different ways. But yeah, something normally works best if you have something like a difficult, slightly difficult feeling or difficult sensation that you have now, have regularly, that you can just use as a sort of point of a reference in this. Does that make sense? Great. I mean, anxiety is a great one. Everyone has something of that, don't they? But something like that. But something live and fresh. So again, yeah, first of all though, let's just check in with your whole body. Being, you might look around the room, just get a bit, you might even stretch, just to kind of refresh a sense of being embodied. Here we are, even because when we get into a screen world, it's all a bit, I can lose touch with that. So here we are. Notice your skin, notice your, what you're sitting on, the breath. Okay. Begin to notice inside of yourself, if you like. If that invitation makes sense, just how you are in there. Your whole, like the middle of the body, just your breath, your belly. You could close your eyes or just rest your attention ahead of you. So the first invitation, or first part of this exploration, is to just say to yourself in your usual way, I feel, whatever that might be, anxious or impatient or tight. Those are my examples. So just drop it in a couple of times and see what it's like inside, see what happens in the body. I feel. So not forcing yourself to have a response, but just seeing what happens when you do that. I feel. And maybe it's hard to notice, so we get so used to ourselves. Or maybe you have a sense of something. However it is. Noticing it. And then inviting you to sort of put that aside for a moment. Instead of saying, I feel, say something in me feels. Something in me is feeling. Something in me feels, or something in me is feeling. Anxious, or tired, or whatever your word is. And notice the difference, again, letting that drop in. Something in me feels. And see, yeah, there may or may not be some difference. So bringing that to a close. So with shift from I feel to something in me feels. How was that? What did you notice? Again, let's have a few people to share. And again, it may not have hit the spot. It's not something that works. It's not like a kind of fix for everything, but it may have, you may have noticed some difference. So I'd like to be interested to hear from what, if any, and then we'll kind of tie that into the subject. But let's hear from a few people first. And you can chat or speak.
Saying I feel felt quite constrictive.
Mm-hmm.
And limiting, whereas yeah. saying something in me feels, it felt much more like there was a mystery, or it felt expansive, like a bit of release or relief around.
Yeah, that. Yeah. Great. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I love that. That's nice to bring in, something a bit more mysterious is happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a bit more expansive. Lovely. Yeah, and there's a chat. Yeah, it does feel more containable, to say it the second way, like it's not the whole of me. Exactly. That's right. So often we feel like our experience is all of us, and sometimes it is, but more often than not, it's not all of us. Let's just say it like that. Yeah. Anyone else want to share? Mari.
Well, I chose anxiety.
Yeah.
Remembering times past when I have felt anxious. And when I said something in me feels anxious, it felt more manageable and handleable. However, when I remember the bodily feelings around anxiety, like tension and discomfort, it didn't work to say something in me feels uncomfortable or something in me feels tense.
Interesting, yeah.
Or like the whole of my body is implicated.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay,
so
yeah.
It was helpful to say something in me feels anxious, but it wasn't helpful to say something in me feels tense.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, it's a different
experience.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is this is a tool that works at different times in different ways. And if it doesn't, the more so important is again, which comes back to sensing, which we were doing before. If it doesn't fit, like if it feels like you're telling yourself something that's not true, that wouldn't feel right. This isn't about trying to make yourself feel, I don't know, make different. It's like, but often it's more true. Now, if it isn't true, of course, that's right. When you say something in me feels tense, it doesn't fit. That's okay. But to say something in me feels anxious, oh, okay, now I can sense it's something different for me, or me being a bit with it or bigger than it. That's great. So you notice that. So Max, it says, and should I just caught on the chat, can it be separated from self? So was that from ego? Was that the when I? Okay, cool. We'll come back to that. Lovely. Okay. So there's a lot more to that little exploration that we could explore now, but I want to kind of just weave it into the thing about our theme, really. So where to start? I suppose I would like to share a few insights around this topic and kind of weave in these two experiential things we've done around that. So what is it? What is it? What is it that's happening? So when we talk about ego, we're definitely talking about something that happens. It's not like there's not nothing going on. You know, there's definitely something going on, and I'm using very open terms for it right now, deliberately. So I'll put forward some senses I have of what's going on around this. Or like, what have I found in my explorations from focusing that touch on this. So I guess what I found is collections of parts of me. So this whole health thing of something in me really points to different parts of us. We have many different parts of us that kind of operate within us. So if you like, one way of defining this whole business of ego is just like collections of parts of me, or even somethings. That's even more open. Something in me feels something in me wants something, something in me needs something, something in me. So we have this whole kind of process, going on of collections of parts of us that sometimes we feel very acutely in our experience. And most often they always want something. You know, that's what we associate ego, I think, with wanting, don't we? With this experience of wanting or needing something. Yeah. So for me, I found it so helpful to kind of not really think in terms of having an ego, but more like, because I've got parts of me that want something. That's always going on, or not always, but when I'm feeling like I'm in touch with something that's kind of tight and all about me, which is what you could call ego, it's about something in me or some things in me. Yeah. And another input, so that's the first thing, collections of parts. The second thing here is those parts are not fixed or permanent in any way, at least not that I've found. They're living processes, like, or patterns. So again, I think this is helpful to think of our experience not in terms of bits that we kind of do something to. I'm going to get rid of my ego, or I'm going to destroy this part of myself. I mean, you please be my guest and try, but I've never had any success with that. It splits yourself off in from one part to another, and it's not I don't think experience is like that. Our living experience is a process, it's not a fixed thing, permanent thing, but it's definitely a process of parts wanting, and they can be very persistent, if you like, and they come back many, many times. The part of us that wants to be loved, for example, I'll come back to that in a minute, and it feels like something like solid and like I've just had this for years, but when you touch it directly, which comes into this thing, this sensing that we're talking about directly in the moment, it's always a bit different. It's always something new and fresh there, potentially. And the third thing I want to talk about here is that sometimes, there are subtle and hidden parts of ourselves, if you like. So it's not like, I'm always aware of everything that's going on. You know, we have these parts of ourselves that operate a bit more elusively in the background, and it might suddenly take us over. You know, again, we're still talking about parts, but sometimes, they can be kind of hidden, if you like. They're kind of working in the background. So I'm also here pointing to an ongoing process. It's not, for me at least, it's not like, oh, suddenly, yeah, I've noticed all my parts of myself, and that's it. I'm done now. I finished with ego. It's like life is always a sort of fresh interaction. There's always new experiences coming at us which draw out different elements, draw out different pieces. So it's an ongoing process of that. Hey, Lucien, there's a question there. Go for it. Let's have some questions. Go ahead, please.
Marie said, if I'm pronouncing correctly. Mari,
wasn't it?
Mari. So it strikes me that at first you mentioned that when you said you felt anxious, you were containing the whole thing, but that you were having a better handle to it than when you are looking at the smaller components, as in tension in the body and things. So I sometimes think that the ego is there are different parts to it, but there's also like a hierarchy of parts. So maybe what Mary said, anxiety was the high level thing, and the component parts were, you know, tension in the body and things like this. So when you mentioned anxiety as a whole, you were handling it better than if you were just looking at the small component of it. So it's not just parts, but maybe also a hierarchy of parts, so levels and layers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there are many dimensions to our experience. That's what, exactly. And physical, emotional, this way of working with parts is a sort of, it's a bit, it uses our imagination a bit. I think it helps because it can engage our imagination a little bit. Okay, so part of me is anxious, and I feel that in the body, like in maybe in a big way, Like we feel it like it's, but like, but then we sense something and we can be with it. We can be curious about it. There's something in us that feels anxious. What's that like? And we can begin to develop an empathic relationship with it, which is in a way the next step. So yeah, thank you, yeah. Which anyway touches this last piece I want to say about this whole topic. Is it the more we begin to sense ourselves like bigger than our experience, let's say, or see that there are these parts of us, these somethings that are kind of operating in us, the more we can access and live from a bigger self, you know, this, and I haven't got an adequate term for this bigger self. People, various traditions have different names for this. I've not found one that really fits here, but I'm calling it bigger self. Or if you like, a self that isn't just driven by these parts. So often in our life, we get taken over. This is why it feels so painful to have an ego, if you like, or to experience, because it feels like these parts of us take over. So say it's an anxious part or someone who really wants something, you know, so it's very easy, isn't it? It becomes like something that drives us, say in some relationship with somebody. And it feels like us, you know, and then we know we're more than it, but then we just see it's like it's just taking the driving seat and off we go. Yeah. But focusing is an invitation to stop and notice, okay, maybe that's not all of me. Maybe, or at least be curious, what's it like in the moment? What's it like right now? Okay, something in me is wanting something. Let's be curious about that. Let's not even have an assumption about what yet. Let's notice it directly. So it's really important to have that sense of not being it and come into a relationship with it. Just want to share a little example here. I was doing a course recently last year, and the teacher on the course was someone who I really looked up to. And, you know, and at varying points on this course, I found myself thinking, yeah, found myself acting in a way like trying to get their approval or getting to like make them like me and it's, you know, just get into this whole, oh my God, it's painful. And it's sort of painful to get taken over by that kind of experience. And you end up making an idiot of yourself, or at least you feel that you get into caught in that process. Max knows what I'm talking about because she was there. So you get, how I began to work with this is, you know, initially, of course, I'm like, no, stop it. Stop doing that. You know, you're just making a fool of yourself. But then, yeah, I bring in these skills. I notice, okay, something in me wants something. Something in me wants something. And I begin to come into a relationship with that part of me. So it's no longer all of me. And that already feels better. Like, okay. And already helps not being driven by it. And then it's like, oh, then over the period of, you know, I haven't got a specific, but over that period of that course, I gradually begin to come into relationship with it. A part of me, oh, what does it want? It wants this person to think I'm amazing. Oh, okay. And I can listen to it a bit more. It wants them to like me. Oh, I want them to, you know, want them just to think well of me. And I just begin over time, just develop an empathic relationship with that part of me. And then it just becomes easier. Then I can play with it, actually. What happens in the end is I do a comedy sketch about the whole thing, about how much everybody wants this person's approval, you know, so it becomes something playful. But initially it's kind of painful and tight and what you would call, oh, I'm being egotistical, and to something that, okay, there's this part of me that wants somebody to love me, you know, and it's like, it's no, in a way it's there and I'm just holding it really. So yeah, just a little example there from my own recent experience. So I suppose what I also want to say is I've never in my experience of meditation and focusing all these years, I've never found an ego. I've never found this part, like this fixed thing that's like, and here's this lump of me that's an ego, right? You might have found that. If you have, then tell me about it. I've never found it. But what I have found is these somethings. Somethings in me that really want something, and they want what they, well, what really helps is coming into relationship with them, yeah, rather than battling with them, yeah, which creates more pain or splitting off. Like, this is some part of me I've got to get rid of, you know, and then we create a split in our experience. You know, temporarily that can give a little bit of relief perhaps, but it doesn't really bring long-term transformation. It doesn't help, I don't think, in the. So this whole business of labeling ego, ourselves an ego, or even, or maybe there's other ways we might label it, is often can be unhelpful if it is not empathic, if it's not, it's not direct and fresh. Yeah, maybe I'll pause there and invite any questions, because I've said enough for now. So please also, and I'm very happy to have contradictory questions, like, I don't agree with you, think you're talking bollocks, so that's fine. We can, let's make it real. So there, Mari's got a question, and there's Joy. Oh, hang on just a minute. I can hear you now. Great, please.
Okay. No, I just wanted to make a comment to say that if you can accept the parts of you that are painful, then, well, what I found recently was that I managed to accept a part of me that I had been really ashamed of before, and it was really painful. But when I managed to accept it, then I found I could laugh at it. And it was like a really healing experience to be able to just have a giggle about it, you know.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Freeing, lovely experience.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you. Yeah, sharing. Yeah, it becomes very different, doesn't it, when you can be playful with it like that.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
But you can't do that unless you accept it first, can you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the other thing that reminds me of is also nothing really changes. If as soon as we split ourselves off from something and like it's bad and I've got to get rid of it, there's very little opportunity for change in that, because it's not a living relationship. You just shut it off. You just shut it down. You know, it's become this thing you want to get rid of. I mean, nobody likes getting treated like that in their own life outside. So like, it's the same inside of us. You know, if it's not a living relationship, it becomes a kind of fixed thing. Mm. And therefore, yeah. And then it doesn't even change. So yeah, thank you for that. Great. Someone else. Yeah. Max, can I unmute you? There we go. Got you.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. I guess I had, a comment around, or a question for you, Peter, actually, around what happens when you've got parts of yourself which are in conflict. So you might for them and be quite empathic, but in one moment you're, you know, embodying one part of yourself, and then another moment you're embodying another part of yourself, and actually there is a conflict between the two, or the three, or the four, and you know. And I think in those instances it is sometimes much easier just to silence some of the parts or to cut them off, rather than to try and work out how to deal with the conflict. So I wondered if you had anything to share about that.
Thank you. Great question. Yeah. I mean, the first thing is, I guess, sort of empathy in a way, just knowing that, just saying how difficult that sort of situation is, especially when we're in really, like, say, addiction, for example, some very entangled kind of experience where we got parts that's really in conflict. So, you know, that's like one part of you saying, do this, you know, another part saying, no, don't do that, it's terrible. And how, you know, it can be really difficult. And in a way, we might need more than this method I'm saying here to help us deal with that. I mean, there are many approaches that work in combination with focusing to work with it. So, you know, you might need to sort of temporarily give yourself a kind of break from some kind of part, if you like, in that kind of circumstance. So that's one thing to say. Another thing to say is, I think over time you can begin to develop the capacity to be with all of your experience. So you, if you're like, you are the listener, you the big self, can listen to these parts of you, and like warring siblings or something. Like, okay, this part of me says it's all going to go terribly wrong. You know, you should never do that. And this other part of me is like, come on, do it. And you listen with empathy with each one. And anyway, you don't have to, and it's interesting, something very magical happens when you can be with both at the same time, or let's say over a period even. You listen to one, really give it empathy, and then another time you listen to another. And you begin to be less controlled by them, and just give them, and you carry them in your life, let's say, and just hear them, but they don't necessarily have to drive you. Once parts of us really feel heard, something can happen, something quite transformational. But that can take quite a long time, Max. So just sort of pointing to this can be quite tangled. It can be difficult and unclear. But there is I've definitely felt that potential growing in me to be with the parts, all of them in a way. Does that make sense? Yeah. Great. And to say, it can get quite tangled. Joy, you were going to say something when you were just
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a sort of a reflection, I suppose. I was sort of thinking of ego as being identifying with a particular narrative or a particular idea. Mm. I'm this kind of person, and I'm like this because this happened and this happened, and
right, yeah.
And if you are identifying with that, that then blocks the freshly experiencing things, because you're not in a relationship with your experience. Everything's being filtered through that idea that I'm a kind person, or I'm a talented person, or I'm a selfish person, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so almost that would be thinking of ego as a way of being. It's a particular way of being in which you're more focused on your ideas about who you are than on your direct experience. And so I suppose I was thinking, so a positive spin on trying to kill the ego, which is obviously quite an aggressive way of putting it, would be trying to have a different way of being in which you have more direct experience, and you're more in touch with direct experience and less controlled by a narrative or an set of ideas.
Yeah, great. Lovely, that makes sense. That's right. And really, really, we have this expression, don't we, when we say, oh, I really feel out of my comfort zone, you know, and like, I'm not the kind of person who does dancing, or I'm not the kind of person who does whatever it might be, you know. Mm. We bump against that identity, don't we? And what happens at that edge is really interesting. You know, what you do there, I'm not saying you should dance or not dance, but it's like, what happens at that is I think, is that what that, would that meet what you're saying? Is something about that idea of who you are?
Mm. But,
yeah, that's right.
Mm.
And if they carry on,
sorry, I was just going to say the idea of who you are that can be restricting.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you sense directly like what's happening, rather than I'm not this kind of person, like what's happening inside? Well, I don't know, maybe like something in you might feel scared or worried about what will happen, or maybe it's okay to try it out a little bit, or like who knows what happens at that edge. But once you go into direct experience, there something different happens. That's right.
Mm.
I mean, it's a great way to that playing at the edge is a great way to shake things up a bit in a good way, in a not overwhelming way. I think, you know, taking little risks or just taking yourself a little bit out of your comfort zone in some it can be can really teach us a lot about this whole area of identity and who we are. Thank you. Great. So I'm aware of time. Let's just double check in on time. I guess a bit of summing up and a bit of what next. I mean, it's a big topic. You know, we've really just touched the surface here, I guess. But we're like, we looked at two different. I guess we looked at different ways of viewing what this experience. You know, we could view ego, as like as identity, a sense of self, or the selfish me or something. Something to get rid of, or I guess what I'm putting forward here is a different way of relating to it. Something, well, not even it, a different way of relating to ourselves. It's just really a kind of a collection of processes, a flow of processes that are in relation to life as it happens. Yeah, and something to be related to, something to be curious about, something to notice in our fresh experience, rather than an idea of it. What's it actually like? Yeah. And yeah, we touched on two tools that are helpful in this process. One you could call direct sensing, just noticing it directly, and then this whole sense of being with something in me, rather than I'm feeling anxious, something in me feels anxious. So those are the two tools we've looked at. So I'm hoping that's opened up the subject a little bit. And I suppose it may be also just a tie-in with the title of the talk. But for me, though, that this shift from seeing the ego as a sort of something to battle with, to get rid of, to a living process, gives more freedom. And that freedom is something that, you can continually build on and open up. I've got a couple more seminars coming up next week, 16th 7:30, so Steps to Radical Inner Change. So it's really looking at how we change sort of deep habits, what happens in that process. And then on the 24th, looking at this whole topic of what I'm called turning towards the world, which is, I guess, really about what it's like to live in this world, you know, what our body senses about that, and how we can meet some of the experiences of that, of just being alive and conscious in this time. Following on from that, just the end of the month, just to alert you to a couple of courses. So I've got an online course in this approach of focusing. It's called Deep Listening. So that's a five-week course starting 31st of January. And also on the same day, a kind of mini, what I call a mini course, which is just a much shorter set of modules, four-week course, 6 hours, so 1.5 hours on focusing with decisions, so how to use this approach to work with decisions. That's all on my website. There's more courses later on in the year. I'll be posting the recording of this talk on my Facebook page and also on the website. If you want to come back to it or share it or whatever, please. And if you have spoken and want that not to be on there, that's fine. I can work with that too. Take it out. Yeah. Any final questions? We've got a couple of minutes. Maybe there's any little last pieces that want to be said or asked about anything before we finish. And I'll probably hang around for a couple of minutes at the end if you want to ask stuff as well.
I'm still not really sure what we mean by ego.
Oh yeah,
is
yeah.
It a thing or is it not a thing?
Well, I would say it's not a thing. but probably more important is to test it out in your own experience. But I haven't found a thing. I don't think there are any things really. at all. But, I mean, there was. Carry on. Sorry.
No.
Okay, great. Yeah. And this comes from this is always from Eugene Gendlin's work, The Process Model, is his philosophy, really. And the process model is, yeah, life's a process. Life's a living process. In a way, you can't actually separate into things at all. Anyway, someone's. Just join there. Yeah, great. Brilliant. Great, Max. Thank you. Good. So, yeah, I'll end there. And if anyone wants to hang around and chat for a bit, I'll be here for a couple more minutes just as we end. But I'll officially start the recording and then and maybe see you on the next call if you're here there. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.